Believe? She tapped her forehead. When you were but an Asha apprentice, I was foolish enough to think I could compel you. I could plant suggestions in your mind, and you would believe them as your own. All that changed, however, when the Ozzy chose you. And now it is I who, embarrassingly enough, must dance to your tune. That's not an answer, I said, seething. It is called a scrying rune. There is no such thing as a scrying rune. Do you require a demonstration? Ana closed her eyes, and a strange rune flickered across my mind, one I had never seen before. Fox tensed, ready and watchful. The compulsion rune flared brighter as I plunged into her head, commanding her to remain still, to do nothing. And yet I could sense her thoughts drifting where I could not reach.
There is a guard stationed outside my door named Garveth. His wife is 9 months with child and due for labor any day. But he worries his duties at his post prevent him from being with her should her water break.
Fox left the room before she had even finished her thought.
He must be a joy to have around, Ana said cheerfully. Aren't you glad you could spend more time with your brother than fate originally intended?
I tightened her hold, and her smug grin vanished. Explain yourself.
I imagine it would be difficult to teach you the scrying rune in this small cell, all the wards being what they are. Perhaps a small compensation for my assistance. A larger room, perhaps an actual bed.
No.
You wanted a memory. Why not ask the young heart forger to extract it now from my mind? He can see for himself that I do not lie.
I glanced at Kalad, who nodded. If this is another trick, I warned. Kalad laid a finger against the faceless woman's heart's glass. His eyes widened, and his hand trembled.
Don't be shy, Ana cooed. Do not let my unusual memories color your judgment of me.
With a violent jerk, Kalad stepped back. Violet-hued smoke clung to his fingers.
I got it,
he said hoarsely. Are you all right, Kalad?
Yes. It's just her mind.
I should have warned you, the faceless said cheerfully. I have quite the checkered past.
She's telling the truth.
Kalad placed the purple smoke inside a glass vial.
But scrying is the extent of what she can do.
Fox returned, scowling.
The guard's name is Garveth. It's true, every word she says. Damn her. He swore he never talked to her, much less entered this room.
He could be lying, I insisted.
I can give you more examples if you wish,
Ana offered.
The prince was here. I brushed against a royal mind some days ago. He worried that his sheltered upbringing prevents him from ruling Odalia. He wished to see more of the land beyond its borders, to allow him a better understanding of his people. Incidentally, it was in his mind where I first gleaned knowledge of his impending engagement.
I increased my hold on her, and her eyes rolled back in her head, her body twisting in agony as the grip tightened.
Tia!
Fox's arms circled me, shaking me out of my rage.
Tia, stop it!
I let go. Ana collapsed. Only the manacles chained to her wrists kept her upright. And those just barely. Her head drooped. I thought she had lost consciousness until she made a soft wheeze.
I must congratulate you, Tia. You have only gotten stronger in the years since.
Whatever possessed you, Tia?
Fox was furious, and rightfully so. I didn't answer, focusing on reigning in my anger, aware that I could not lose control of myself like that again. Ana lifted her head. A tiny smile hovered on her lips.
Very well. I swear to never enter your beloved prince's mind again. I swear it on my daughter's grave. But I have been very forthcoming today. I have only one boon to ask of you in return.
No.
It's only a book, Tia, passed down to those like me for centuries. Many have killed for it. Yet I give it to you freely and ask you to protect it.
And what book is this?
A book of hidden runes, Lady Tia. Hidden runes wielded by dark spellbinders, lost over time, deliberately, by the Asha, to prevent dark witches like us from rising too high. I learned of the scrying rune there and of many others. Your own elder Asha possess a copy. You lie. It's all about control, my dear Tia. They only teach you the necessary runes to put down Deva and risk your life for their cause. Why would they teach you the very runes that would allow you to rise above them? Then why are you giving this to me? I asked. Because I have not given up on you. Now recovered, she leaned back against the wall and stretched. Your anger is promising, my bone witch. We have need of your fury. Once you have decided to take my claim seriously, about the effectiveness of these runes and about your Asha elder's treachery, then come back to me, and I will tell you everything. I need none of your help.
Ah, but this knowledge will eat at you. We have shared minds, Tia. I know a little more about you than others do. I know of your hunger for strange books and stranger learnings. I know you worry constantly over Michaela's fate. You're concerned that one day the Aussie that lodges in your mind might overwhelm you. That your mind will be corrupted and overwhelmed by the dark rot that your elders frighten you with. There are many spells in my book that hold the answers to your troubles. Once you acquire such tastes for power and appreciate its sweetness, you shall stop playing Asha and come to us. The Faceless, where your skills will be put to better use.
Never, I spat. Never is such a long time to promise, Tia. We live too short of lives to consign ourselves to an eternity you may regret. And it is not terrible to have a black heart's glass. We are stronger with it, more steeped in the dark, less vulnerable to dark rot.
Ah, but the elders will not allow you to think that.
I don't believe you.
Black Heart's glass will never be taken from you the way Michaela's heart's glass was taken from her. Black Heart's glass will always return to you regardless of anyone's control, whether you wish it to or not.
Is that not temptation enough to take my book?
The process makes it less than appealing. She laughed.
A little corruption is good for the soul, Tia. The book I speak of lies within the Odalian Cemetery. Where lies poor, forgotten Millicent Tread of Astera? There you shall find your true calling.
I said nothing and headed for the door.
Until we meet again,
Aina called after us before the heavy metal doors slid shut. Tell the commander that Garveth is to have time off until his wife gives birth, I instructed one of the passing soldiers. And I want all guards keeping watch over the cell, standing at least 20 feet away. No one but the Deathseeker who delivers her meals may approach. I knew it would probably be ineffective, but I had to do something.
What did she mean about an Aussie lodged in your mind?
Fox demanded as we left the prison.
You killed it 2 years ago, didn't you? Has it been resurrected?
I swallowed. No. I never killed it.
This sounds like a private conversation between you two,
Kalad said nervously from behind us.
I should be going.
Stay, Kalad,
Fox demanded.
You've been taking memories from Tia all this time. Did you not know about this?
The forger swallowed.
Well,
Fox gaped at him.
You knew?
It's part of our oath as Heart Forgers. Memories are no one else's business but their owners.
It didn't want to fight, I protested. The Ozzy was under Aina's influence. It fought her as much as I did. But now I'm in its mind, and it's in mine, and I know it meant no harm.
Break your bond with it, Tia. It's too dangerous.
I don't know how even if I wanted to. But it knows I'm not the threat Aina was. It's made no move to attack since I took control.
Slowly, Fox shook his head.
That doesn't make it harmless.
Harmless or not, it hasn't done anything to me. There's something about this bond that makes us aware of each other's presence, and it gives me control of it when I ask.
Tia!
What do you expect me to do, Fox? Tell the Asha elders? Khalid, tell them what would happen if I did.
Khalid swallowed. You'd be locked up just like Aina. You'd be considered a source of danger to everyone. And neither Michaela nor even Altesia has that much authority to protect you.
Tia, don't you think Michaela ought to know at least?
My brother persisted, though much of his irritation was gone, knowing Khalid had spoken the truth.
She won't know how to break the bond any more than I do. At this point, I know more about handling Deva than she does. And as for the others, telling Michaela meant telling Polaire. And after my blow-up at Polaire the other day, telling her would be tantamount to telling the Association.
That I'm a bone witch makes it worse. There'll be people crying for my head soon enough. King Telamane and Prince Kontz could even be accused of conspiring with me.
I won't let that happen.
I really should be going,
Khalid said nervously, backing away.
I really should put this memory in a safer place.
Khalid, come back here. I'm not done with— hells, he's gone.
Fox turned back to me.
I'm not other people, Tia. I'm your brother. You should have told me.
I know about your dislike for Deva, Fox. I knew you wouldn't approve.
Not approving doesn't mean I'm not going to stick by you. Your problems are my own.
He paused.
At least that explains the disorienting sensations I get from you sometimes.
I'm sorry. I'll try my best not to keep anything from you again, I said, reaching out to squeeze his hand.
I like how you say try, like you would do it again if you thought it would spare me the trouble.
My brother sighed.
I guess we have no choice then.
No choice in what?
We have no choice but to find that blasted book that Harpy's been yapping about. If there is guarded magic in it, that might break your bond. That warrants a look.
I remember that day, the Heart Forger said. Your heart's glass shone so brightly, Tia. There was anger and frustration and sorrow, an unhealthy combination. I remembered Aina's, too. She was afraid of you, no matter how she tried to hide that. She was adept enough at disguising it, but I could still see the flecks of blue. I'm surprised how much you recall, considering how quickly you fled. The Heart Forger actually laughed. He was everything she described, and, at the same time, everything she had not. He was dark from his travels, and his eyes were a light gray, nearly as colorless as his hair, which hung long past his shoulders. He looked stronger than I expected, shoulders broad but hunched, arms heavily built. He narrowed his eyes as he focused on me, a habit I recognize, having poor sight myself. His heart's glass was a masterpiece, a dizzying crystal of fractured colors, of a finer cut than the best diamonds. "Who is he?" the Heart Forger asked. "My chronicler, of a sort." The Heart Forger frowned, but his final impression was of sadness rather than of anger. "This is a dangerous thing you do, Tia." "No more dangerous than other choices you have made, Khalid. And you know as well as I that I am running out of options as quickly as Dolores is emptying of people. How did you know to find me here? You were still in exile when I left Ankyo." She smiled at him. "I didn't. but I knew you wouldn't stay in Kion for long. Ankyo and Odalia discussed you now as much as they discussed me. During my exile, I scryed my way down the coast and followed the mines leading into Santiang. Imagine my surprise to find this man in charge. She nodded at the Emperor, who had made good on his promise not to move while we were gone. I knew he would seek you out and that you would be in danger. You were able to scry over that distance? Your powers are stronger than even before you were... His eyes met hers, and she nodded. I had little time to do much forging for him, he continued. I've barely been in prison 2 days. Is that why you came to Denoris with all the Deva in your heart's glass? Can you see them? Their hearts are intertwined with yours, and only your death can pull them apart. He looked troubled. I am afraid, Tia. The Asha knelt before him, her hands clasped around his. Will you stop me then? She whispered, and for a moment she sounded very young. Is there any other alternative, Khalad? No, the boy said heavily. There isn't. That is the problem. Do you approve, then? No. But I understand why you do it. He glanced at me again. How much does he know? As little as possible, the Asha replied. I found the princess, and the rest of the soldiers are tending to their wounded, Lord Kaelin said, entering the room. The Heartforger's jaw grew slack, and he rose to his feet as Lord Kaelin approached. He continued, They surrendered swiftly, and I do not think they will cause more trouble, not with the Deva waiting outside. Hello, Khalad. Lord Khalad's mouth worked uselessly, and tears of both shock and joy filled his eyes. His heart's glass wept, a shining star. I am glad to see that I can still hide things from you, Khalad, the Bone Witch said, smiling. We saw you die, the Heartforger finally croaked, clutching the other boy's shoulders. Tia tried to raise you. We couldn't bring you back. We saw you die. I got better, Lord Kaelin said. A strange smile played on his lips, and his heart's glass burned as brightly as the Heartforger's.
7. Millicent Tread's grave was a neglected tangle of grass and dandelions. The small headstone that marked her final repose was obscured by the tall weeds and heavy stones. It lay the farthest from the graveyard entrance, relegated to a plot near forgotten folk who had died in the last century, and were therefore of little use to the current one. I could see why Ena would plant secrets along its periphery. Few people had reason to go this deep into the boneyard, and Millicent Tread was difficult to find unless you knew she was there to begin with. Despite the overabundance of vegetation, the earth around the tomb had been recently disturbed. It had taken us nearly 2 hours of searching to locate poor Millicent, and by the time we unearthed her small, crumbling coffin, the sky had lightened into softer gradients of grays, the hours moving toward dawn. I hoped that some force would prevent Lady Michaela from wandering out of bed again. It would be far more difficult to explain trespassing at this grave than at King Vanner's tomb.
If she lied, I'll strangle her myself,
Fox grumbled. He did most of the digging, though I did the sweating for the two of us. My brother lowered himself gingerly into the hole he dug, clearing away the splinters of wood and prying off what was left of the coffin lid. An unknown rune of intricate markings suddenly blazed forth in front of me, shining brightly. There was a strange yapping sound. Then a withered hand shot out to grasp Fox by the sleeve. Fox's blade swung, shining in the dim light, and took the skeletal hand off cleanly at the wrist.
I knew it, he growled. She set us up!
Millicent Tread's corpse was not the only body rising from the ground. Other gravestones shuddered and broke apart around us, their occupants struggling out of their graves, decayed jaws snapping. Fox spun in a circle, taking two heads with one clean swipe. Yet even as the skulls dropped to the ground, their bodies lumbered forward. Every arm or leg Fox chopped off became an additional appendage to defend against. and my brother soon traded his blade for his hilt, driving the heavy, blunt end to crush their bones. I drew compulsion in the air, and was immediately assaulted by a barrage of personalities. None of the corpses were intent on fighting off my control. If anything, they were eager to embrace me, to lay bare all that was left of their minds. The mishmash of thoughts made my head spin.
My little boy Ahmed, to take the time to lay flowers by my grave.
Good-for-nothing husband, always carousing till the break of dawn. What a visit every so often kill him. My daughter, have you heard news of her? I've been waiting years and years.
The Aussie's thoughts crept in amid the chaos. Instinctively, I latched onto it and embraced the familiar magic that flowed freely through our link.
Return to your graves!
The compulsion rune flared brighter than I had ever seen it, and the corpses froze. Like marionettes being jerked on invisible strings, they collapsed back into the holes they had clawed out of, moaning piteously all the while. Only after the last disappeared back into its soil did I let go of the Aussie, sinking down from the effort it had taken me. Fox was by my side in moments, worried.
Was that the Aussie?
I grinned weakly. It helped. I just need to catch my breath. As horrifying as the corpses were, they posed no real threat.
I inferred as much. I caught the tail end of their thoughts.
He glanced back at Millicent's grave.
This one seems peaceful again, too. But what did that faceless woman hope to achieve from this, if not to attack?
She was showing off. One of the many unknown runes her book holds, I think.
Why tell her secrets? She'd lose the advantage.
I'm not sure what her plan is. But if that book exists, then I'm going to find it. If there's any means to better control the Aussie. But my brother shook his head.
Absolutely not. You swore you'd get rid of the Deva, remember?
I hesitated, then nodded. Yes, I know what I promised.
Good, because I'll be holding you to that.
Fox returned to Millicent's grave, his every movement laced with caution. He nudged away the rest of the debris with a foot, used the tip of his blade to prod the woman's remains out of the way, and peered inside.
So she can speak the truth after all,
he exclaimed, producing a small rectangular package carefully wrapped in twine and waxed paper.
I'm surprised it lasted this long, buried under all this dirt.
I remembered the churned earth around the grave. Unless it's been buried recently. Fox frowned.
True, though the idea that Aina might have an ally running loose in Keon is worrying.
He handed the package to me. I removed the twine holding it together. It was a leather-bound book of some age, but in good shape. An upside-down crown was embossed onto the leather, and my heart leaped to my throat. This is the false princess crest, Fox. I turned to a page at random and saw unfamiliar runes. The text was archaic, like the book was written in an era when speech required more formality. This rune shows you how to control 100 corpses at once.
Isn't that impossible? Aren't Asha able to control only a dozen at most?
Unless you use a seeking stone. And using that will overwhelm you quickly with dark rot if you're not strong enough. I winced, remembering my first encounter with one. I'll need to see if the magic is as effective as this book claims.
No.
I looked at him. Fox, I have to. If any of these spells work, we can use them to our advantage. If we can't tell the Ashaka Association about the Aussie, then we definitely can't tell them about this. The only people who can manage these spells are Michaela and me, and she's in no shape to handle these runes.
And once the Association discovers your secret, you're going to be hauled to prison for having this book in your possession, just as you would be for your bond with the Deva.
Fox rubbed the side of his head.
Can you not even share with Polaire or Alticia?
I hesitated. I remembered Polaire's intimation that I was not relevant to the decision the Association makes, even when they involve me. No, I decided. Polaire's too close to the Elder Asha. I seriously don't know how Alfie would react to this. Fox scowled.
Fine. For now. But you cannot experiment with me around.
And then, for the first time, he grudgingly addressed the shadow that had quietly been eavesdropping in my head.
And the same goes for you, too. Do you hear me, you overgrown snake?
That was so typically Fox that I had to smile. And the Aussie rumbled cheerfully in my head in response. At Fox's insistence, we started with the simplest of the book's spells. Scrying. Its rune resembled a distorted tree branch climbing upward, limbs twisted and splayed. To commit it to memory required practice. Like all spells, I was to trace the rune, to let my will bleed into its shape, and then direct it into another's mind and wrap the rune around its presence.
This is not secretly an exploding rune or something that will send 1,000 dead people climbing in through the window, right?
At this point, I know as much about this as you do, Fox. I took a deep breath. Let's do this. We can spend all day arguing until we're blue in the face, but that won't change anything. Fox's hand strayed to the hilt of his sword, as if swinging a blade at a spell would make all the difference.
One decaying head popping up from anywhere, and I'm sending it back to whatever hell it crawled out from.
I studied the rune again, committing as much of it to memory as I was able. As I drew it in the air, I let my mind settle on its form until it felt as solid as I was, and then I guided it toward Fox. We already shared a bond, but finding another volunteer was not an option at this point. I felt a spurt of dizziness, which quickly abated. I stared at Fox, but had the oddest sensation of staring back at myself. I squeezed my eyes shut and watched myself close my eyes at the same time. Fox, turn around. My perspective swiveled. I disappeared from view, replaced by the small dresser in my room and the small chair beside it.
Is something wrong, Tia?
My bond with Fox was even stronger now. His worry and concern felt like they were my own. In the past, I could always sense his emotions without necessarily feeling them myself. Now I was experiencing the world through him. Fox was puzzled. I felt puzzled.
I don't feel any different. Is it working?
A little too well. I dispelled the rune and felt Fox's thoughts vanish, weariness taking its place. This is the spell Ina used.
That's enough for one day,
Fox decided.
And don't argue. I'm getting tired just sensing your exhaustion. Between this and the graveyard, it's been a long day.
I tried to protest, but it came out as a yawn. Fox tucked me into bed, something he hadn't done since we were kids.
Stop pushing yourself,
I heard him say affectionately before I fell asleep.
The world will turn even when you are not awake to busy yourself in it.
I was fresh and rejuvenated when I opened my eyes again, exceptionally so. Marveling at my sudden energy, I sat up in bed and spotted the Faceless's book, half hidden underneath a dozen other volumes on my table. It would have been better if Fox had kept it with him and prevented me the mischief, but I remembered that the soldiers' barracks had little privacy. I promised Fox I wouldn't experiment, but that didn't mean I couldn't look through the rest of the spells. I climbed back into bed, taking the book with me. The puppet rune, I read, requires great concentration. Wrap the spell around your victim to command as you may. The cadaver performs its last command unless dispelled or until its master's death. Till then, it takes on the artifice of life, moving and acting independently of other forces. Sufficient strength can raise hundreds, even tens of thousands. I stared at the symbol. With some imagination, it did resemble a marionette being jerked on its strings by a dark blob in the background. This must have been the spell Ana used at the graveyard. But how? Didn't Mickey say I cannot control the dead if they aren't willing? Already the book was breaking rules I'd always believed sacrosanct. The next page showed a rune of two intertwined hearts. The heart-share rune, it said, bolstered a fading heart's glass with a second healthier one to delay death until medical attention is administered.
It could even control one's mind to an extent. But where the compulsion rune used force, Heartshare used trust and claimed much better results. It also seemed to be the only spell in the book that Asha and Deathseekers alike could use. It was probably not a rune the Faceless preferred, given their mutual distrust. When the Ozzy had attacked the Darashi Oyun years ago, Asha and Deathseekers withstood their attack by linking runes together. When I had confronted Aina at the Valerian, Michaela, Polaire, and Alticia had lent me their strength in much the same way, similar to how I could take strength from the Ozzy to add to my own. But sharing Heart's Glass appeared to be a much more intimate spell than even that. I turned the page. The illusion rune was a series of whorls and loops. Rather than cast the image into one's mind as most other runes would, this one cast the illusion around the target, to disguise it instead. A deception of sight rather than of mind. When done right, it was capable of hiding structures, people, even thoughts. Another rune dealt with controlling multiple living minds at the same time. The Dominion rune is a constant battle, I read, of pitting one's will against many others. Use at your own peril. It sounded like almost every rune in the book should be used at one's own peril. Next was a rune patterned after a chokehold of vines or perhaps a nest of intertwined snakes. The Strangle rune targets the seeking stones of your enemy. Weave and direct the flow into its center to disperse its source. There were no runes on the next page but a sketch of a silver heart's glass. To you, seeking blade that soars path, take that which came from five great heroes long past and distill into a heart of silver to shine anew. I turned to the last page and found a sketch of another heart's glass, this one as dark as the first was bright. To you, seeking Hollow Knife's path, present yourself with a heart's glass of black, where love's blood has been shed in seven Deva's bezoars. Boil the stones separately, and drink a vial's worth of their waters. Weave compulsion in the air. Its heart shall reveal itself to you. Take it into your heart's glass. The process is not gentle. Each Deva increases the dark rot. The sacrifice is great, but the rewards are priceless. The unity of seven into dark's glass and five into light's glass is the key. Merge both with the first harvest to achieve Shadow Glass, and rise as the great prince once did. To rule as you see fit. I couldn't see how Aina and the other Faceless would be willing to give up so much for immortality if they might die in the attempt anyway. Take five into Light's Glass? Boil bezoars? First harvest? It read more like a recipe for those suspicious cure-alls sold in the shadier parts of Ankyo. And yet, none of the spells talked about severing links with Ozzy either. And with the unexpected relief came guilt. I browsed through the rest of the book and discovered some pages were torn out. Aina might claim to help me, but it was apparent some spells weren't meant for my eyes. I turned back to the scrying spell. My promise to Fox held. I had only sworn not to use spells I had not yet tried. Faint flickers of thought surrounded me. An unexpected smorgasbord of stray minds. I soon realized just how complex the rune was. Without a specific target, its magic harnessed all nearby thoughts for sampling. Aina had not needed to know of Garveth the guard to have access to him. I followed the path back to Fox and found him at the training grounds, attacking one of several straw dummies in the field. His mind felt warm and familiar. A calm, clear pool that suggested more depth than it presented. He was quicker, stronger than I remembered. His body spun and whipped about in ways my clumsier form could never perfect. And his sword blurred, crackling like lightning as he scored decisive blows until he struck his straw opponent's head off its shoulders with one final stroke of the blade.
Not bad, I heard him think, but still not enough.
Cheers rose from the onlookers at the sidelines, and I watched embarrassment march through my brother's thoughts.
3 dummies in a week. 10 minutes in your care and they are demolished, when they would have lasted months with others. Your blows are deadly, Sir Fox.
Commander Lode of the Odalian army came into my view, smiling.
I'm still not strong enough to protect Tia.
My brother thought, but only said,
I do so under your excellent tutelage, my lord. Modesty is well and good, but acknowledging improvement to one's skills is as necessary as acknowledging improvements to one's character.
The man clapped him on the back.
Though I must admit, you're faster and stronger now than when you were on patrol. We will find that damned Dava and get revenge, Fox.
Looking forward to it, Commander.
Good work. You'd be a match even for Lord Kaelin. And that's saying something.
The men feared Fox. His ability to withstand injuries that would kill others when we had first arrived. Many were old comrades he'd known before the Sovel killed him. But Prince Kontz told me how the soldiers of the Odalian army were the best in the world, that skill and courage were lauded above all else, and that Fox would be welcomed despite his ties to Bone Witches. Thinking about Prince Kontz sent a lump to my throat. I closed my eyes, willing away my own emotions before I alerted Fox to my presence. As the commander moved on, I caught a sudden flash of gold and a whisper of silk. A veiled girl stood half-hidden behind a pillar, staring at me. Our gazes met. In the next instant she was gone, darting through an open door leading back to the palace. Within Fox's mind rose memories of lavender and perfume.
Is this for me?
She held up a simple silver pin, a silhouette of a fox dotted with small crystals.
I'm sorry. It's not much.
The tiniest of the turquoise gems in her hair had probably cost 20 times more than the trinket. A soldier's paycheck did not offer many options. The Princess of Kion laughed and hugged it to her chest.
Don't be ridiculous. I'll wear this forever.
Fox blinked and looked up into the sky.
Tia?
I flushed at the private memory. I'm here, Fox. Sorry. I woke up and saw you were gone.
I'm training with the guys. Want some company?
No, just checking up on you. I paused. I think I should get more rest anyway.
Good. Don't overexert yourself.
Gently, he nudged me away from his mind, and I retreated guiltily back into my own head, focusing on my bed, my room, the book on my lap. The scrying rune had opened up a new link between us. I had better access to Fox's thoughts, which made it easy to stumble into his mind without meaning to. I thought about my brother and the Kion princess. I thought about how our laughter sounded that night after the engagement announcement. My infatuation with the prince was a one-sided affair. I imagined promises the prince never whispered. Knew enough of myself to understand that I could catch him no more than I could catch a shadow on the wall. But without selfishness clouding my judgment, I saw how Fox mourned a relationship with the princess. His grief was sharp, and it sliced him deeper than any Aishma spike could, in places my magic could not heal. Kalad had said memories were no one else's business but their owners. And as close as Fox and I were, some memories were too private to be shared. Trembling, I stared at my hands. Learning these runes was surely a lesser transgression than hiding and abetting an Ozzy. I could tell Michaela, at least. I paused. Michaela was too weak. And she didn't need this stress right now. Polaire, then? Alticia? Polaire's words drifted to memory. To wield anything that the Faceless would. From the most terrible of Dava to the most innocent-seeming runes. There must be no compromise. Did Michaela care for Ilara as much as she had cared for me? Did my mentor hesitate before delivering the killing blow? Would she hesitate with me? Surely Polaire was exaggerating. There is so much power in this book that could be harnessed in Kion's favor. So what if they had been the runes of the false prince, guarded by his Faceless? A rune by itself did not define the righteousness or the immorality of the magic they cast. Its user did. No. Telling anyone about this magic would be premature, I decided. I should study the runes first, give myself more time to assess how harmful they could be. I laugh now at how foolish I had been then, thinking I knew enough to tell the difference. But fear is a powerful motivator. I had already compromised myself by taking in the Aussie. If I was to be condemned anyway, then I may as well be hanged for a sheep as a lamb. I turned the book over. The inverted crown stared back at me. I will master you, I told it. I will protect everyone from you. If only I were as confident as I had sounded.
And what spell from the book did you learn to raise Kaelin? The Heartforger asked. The Bone Witch grinned, suddenly impish. It was not a spell from that book. May I? Lord Khalad inspected her heart's glass, placing a finger against the dark surface. There was a faint spark as his finger met the glass, but the forger did not react. He watched the colors of her heart swirl and ebb before removing his hand. You raised him from the force of your own heart's glass, channeled by the strength of all seven Deva. Did you know it would succeed? No, but they promised I could achieve everything with Shadow Glass, so why not this? I don't understand, I interrupted. It is no secret that Dark Asha can raise the dead. What is so different this time? Those with silver heart's glass cannot be brought back to life, but Kaelin should never have died. Anger was a potent venom sustaining her determination. If you raised Kaelin, the Heartforger began, a sudden wild hope in his eyes, then can you... would you... The Bone Witch bowed her head. I don't know, but I will try. I can promise you that. Thank you, Lord Khalad whispered, still trembling, and turned to the corpse, unfazed by the eviscerated remains. Blighted? He asked. She nodded. We must be vigilant. I will inspect every soldier for symptoms, the Heartforger promised, turning to the wounded. At Lord Kaelin's command, the injured had been carried in, and the room soon filled with groans and cries. Those who'd survived the Deva unscathed hurried in, lugging heavy pots of water behind them. Set them up at the end, the Asha instructed. Keep them boiling hot. The men obeyed, the Eshma watching them curiously, coupled with the thought of the other Deva waiting outside, made them compliant. They barely spared a glance at their former emperor, still under the beast's watchful eye. You're going to treat them? The Bone Witch had talked about laying waste to Denoris, to bring the kingdom to ruin. Yet she bade her monsters not to kill, to allow most of the population to flee unharmed. And now she treated the wounded. The Heartforger will think less of me if I do not at least try, the Asha said, even as she pulled up the sleeves of her hua, folding them up her arm like a fisherman's wife might, before she took in the daily catch. I have never thought less of you, Tia, no matter what anyone said, and the sooner we are done with these men, the sooner I can finish the heart's glass I promised you. Lady Tia? It was a stuttered whisper, an unfamiliar voice. A frightened young Denorian girl stood, hiding behind Lord Kaelin's back. The Asha smiled. It is good to see you looking well, Princess Yansheo. I am sorry to meet again under unfavorable circumstances.
But the kingdom, my people, gone! The monsters at our doors! Lady Tia, what have you done?
Upheavals come with every new ruler. Your people have fled, but they shall return. Your army will heal. I have come only to rid Denoris of a malignancy, and chaos was the quickest way to bring it festering to the surface.
But what malignancy do you speak of?
Do you need to ask? Who confined you to your rooms these long months? Who made you a prisoner in your own palace? The princess glanced at the emperor and looked away. The Bone Witch's voice gentled.
Do you miss him still?
The young noblewoman trembled.
Yes.
The dark Asha sighed. She wrapped a poultice made from herbs around a wounded soldier's side and rose to her feet. She walked toward the girl and took the girl's hands in her own.
Yan Sheo, some days will be better than others. Some days you will wake up crying, his name the first to fall from your lips. Some days you will look up at the stars in the sky from a lonely beach and know none of them look down on him.
Her eyes slid briefly to the Death Seeker, who had taken his place among the injured, and then returned to the princess.
That is the nature of grief, but to grieve means you have loved. To love opens up the possibility for grief. There cannot be one without the other.
But, milady,
the princess choked,
it isn't fair. He died so terribly, and for me.
Life isn't fair, dear one, and sometimes neither is death.
8.
Tia, are you in there? Tia!
I shoved the book underneath my pillow and scrambled out of bed. I cursed the time, myself, even Kaelin at my door, bellowing for blood, and then myself again for good measure. I had forgotten about practice.
There is no excuse for being this tardy.
Kaelin exploded the instant I opened the door. His brown hair was tied back from his face and his hand was raised, ready to punch the door again had I been a second slower to respond.
Spare me your explanations. If you've enough time to slack off, then you've enough time to spar. Let's go.
I'm sorry.
Sorry doesn't cut it.
He growled but said little else as he all but dragged me to the practice field. Normally he would have blistered the air around him with remonstrations, so my apology must have startled him, my character typically being one that has few reasons to give him apologies. The fields were empty. A quick poke at my bond told me Fox and the other soldiers had moved to the archery grounds, and Kaelin wasted no time beginning. Despite his earlier threats, he assumed the defensive, giving me the first chance to strike. My reflexes were slower, clumsier than usual. I was no master at swordsmanship, though Kaelin had been training me for many long months. Regardless, the Death Seeker had never been one to give up on lost causes, even if that lost cause was me. Kaelin's blade blocked my first blow. I could hear his orders.
Bring your arm up. Keep your feet moving.
But my body refused to comply. The scrying spell, I realized. I'd used it before Kaelin had come stomping in, and now that my initial burst of adrenaline was gone, I had no second wind to fall back on. I ducked low, using my smaller height to my advantage, and swung my sword up. He sidestepped the move, and I managed to parry his next attack. He backed away and waited again, but I never knew if I could have followed through with another blow. My knees buckled, and I must have blacked out, though I had no memory of hitting the ground. When I came to, I was sitting propped against a tree, a cloak bunched behind my head. Kaelin was beside me, a combination of annoyance and concern.
You okay, Lady Tia?
Kaelin never called me that before.
Didn't you tell me that honorifics had no place in battle?
I croaked, strangely lightheaded. I felt something cold and soothing pressing against my forehead.
The battle was over as soon as you passed out. Why didn't you tell me you were exhausted?
There wasn't time, I mumbled, though that was only partly true. You dragged me out of my room like the palace was on fire. But I'm better now.
Don't lie.
The Death Seeker gave the green flickers in my heart's glass a pointed glance. Sometimes I forgot that Kaelin could read them as well as I could.
I should have known something was wrong. Your sword techniques are terrible. You leave your defenses so open that any expert swordsman could stab you through several times and run before you recovered. And you always try to overextend your reach. But tardiness has never been one of your bad habits.
Only Kaelin could insult and praise me all in the same breath.
I'm glad you think so highly of me, I said. But my sarcasm missed him by miles.
I know I'm not the first person you'd choose to divulge your secrets to. And I'm sure you have other friends in the Asha Ka you can confide in. Share your worries with your brother.
It isn't good to keep them bottled up inside so you start losing sleep over them.
Was he trying to be nice? I was accustomed to a contrary, belligerent Kaelin. A kind Kaelin was a strange animal I had little experience with. What are you going on about? Was I imagining it, or did pink touch his cheeks? Kaelin was a master at concealing his emotions, so his heart's glass only showed obvious irritation.
Prince Kontz, of course, he shot back testily. Stop feeling sorry for yourself.
I gaped at him. It had not occurred to me that Kaelin was trying to cheer me up. His tone softened.
His impending marriage isn't something he has control over. Neither of them do. This was an arrangement between Empress Alex and King Telamane. An alliance between Kion and Odalia. Prince Kontz has nothing but the highest esteem for Princess Inessa, but he isn't happy. Polair and Michaela were aware of the engagement, but I didn't know they hadn't told you.
I was sure my face burned, and my embarrassment made Kaelin even more formal, more awkward in his attempts to soothe me.
It came as a surprise to all of us. Princess Inessa is furious at both Kontz and King Telamane, though she can't appear so in public.
She has no reason to be, I exclaimed despite myself. It isn't fair that Prince Kontz should have to shoulder her anger for his father's... I trailed off. Kaelin was smiling. A rarity.
Kontz could declare war on an innocent village and you'd find a way to defend him still, wouldn't you?
Their engagement shouldn't begin with a misunderstanding, I mumbled. I tried to stand, but Kaelin placed both his hands on my shoulders, gently but with enough pressure to keep me where I was. I said I'm fine.
No, you're not.
He sounded annoyed again, more like the Kaelin I knew.
Stop being so stubborn. Rely on others more often.
Anger burst from my lips. But I can't. Do you know what it's like to have no control over who people think you are? To be feared and hated, even when you protect them? Help them? To be deemed unimportant by your friends, the very people you look up to? It isn't fair. There was a pause before the Death Seeker responded.
You're right,
he said, and his voice made me look at him more closely.
It isn't fair at all. But you live with it and accept it. There isn't much use to complain when there is little you can do.
Kaelin set his jaw. What's wrong?
It's nothing.
A few seconds ago you told me to rely on other people, to not be so stubborn. He sighed.
The official engagement ceremony will take place in a week. King Telamane has temporarily released the Duke of Holzrath so he can attend both the official betrothal and the wedding.
The Duke of Holzrath? But the king's brother had been languishing in prison for years. Arrested after an attempted uprising against his own sibling, his noble blood had spared him from the gallows but not from life imprisonment. And Kaelin was his son.
Blood ties are stronger than treason.
Kaelin laughed bitterly.
Perhaps King Telamane wishes to reconcile with his brother despite all he's done. Whatever the reason, my father shall be present for the betrothal. Whatever the rumors may say.
What rumors?
They're not important.
Kaelin! He glared but gave in.
People have been talking. They think the Duke still plots to take the throne. That I insinuated myself with the royal family to gain the influence needed for his reprieve.
I understood and was ashamed. Kaelin had been judged far longer than I had. To be a traitor's son was hard enough. To be believed a traitor yourself, despite dedicating your life to serving the very people who despise you, was even worse. I had been an object of derision for more than 2 years. Kaelin had been subjected to it since childhood. I'm sorry. I was horrified by my lack of empathy, at having dismissed his personal experiences for my own. All my talk about being hated, I had no right to say that to you.
People need someone to hate, and it's easier to see that in others than to find it in themselves. I should know.
Kaelin added in a strangely calm voice.
I've hated my father nearly all my life.
Was he cruel? I asked hesitantly, then cursed myself. I apologize. You don't need to answer that.
Three apologies in one day? That's promising.
Then, before I could argue, he continued.
No. He was always kind. As warm as a father could be. My mother's death changed him. It was a Deva assault. The same attack that killed Khalad and Kansa's mother.
Kaelin smiled grimly.
It made us all blood brothers of a sort. 3 months after they died, my father rebelled against the crown. He and the king had been on good terms till then. He was barely an adult when Vanir died and Telamain assumed the throne, and he had never once expressed any desire to take power. He bade me goodbye one day and then went missing for months. The next time I saw him, he was in chains. The king felt sorry for me and took me in, first as Khonsa's companion and then as his bodyguard. And when I learned I could channel runes, it almost felt like a blessing. It gave me purpose, a better chance to protect the royal family. The people's hatred didn't matter after that.
That's not true at all, I said hotly. They don't hate you. The soldiers have nothing but the highest regard for you, including Commander Lode. You are well-liked, and I have never heard you spoken of with contempt. If there are those who refuse to acknowledge your loyalty, then they aren't worth a second thought anyway. Kaelin stared back at me, startled, and it occurred to me that in my zeal, I was leaning far too close to him, which he noticed as I did. A stray thought passed through my head. If he smiled as much as Khonsa, he could be just as appealing. I reared back, coloring, and tried to think of something offensive to say to make up for the ludicrousness of what I didn't. If they find your ugly face offensive, though, then that's a different matter entirely. It was obviously an untrue statement and a poor comeback at that, and he started laughing, which made it worse. He really is as good-looking as Prince Khonsa when he laughed.
I was trying to make you feel better. When had our situations become reversed?
I racked my brain for a better repartee, but he bopped me lightly on my head before I could get anything out.
That is enough practice for today. I expect you to be well-rested for tomorrow's spar. Even if I have little faith, there will be much improvement.
I glowered at him as he stood. He ignored my glare, more concerned with choosing his words carefully.
Khonsa and I are as close as two brothers can be. We have both known Princess Inessa since we were children, but he never told me if he thinks of her as someone more than a friend. I also know that he considers you one of his closest and most trusted confidants. While he has never been one to voice his feelings aloud, I suspect his decision for a more personal approach in ruling the kingdom was motivated by his desire to see you safe. I don't know if that helps.
I had to smile. Thank you, Kaelin.
You're welcome. It's good to see Khonsa take his duties as the crown prince seriously, although I now have you to blame for the additional responsibilities he assigned me, including the training of someone who cannot be trained.
You're horrible. My protest was loud in the empty field, but he only laughed again and walked on.
I knew of Tia's infatuation with the prince from the moment we met, Lord Kaelin said quietly, watching as the Asha moved down the rows of injured. My knowledge of it has commanded every meeting, every conversation with her since. I suppose I was disposed to dislike her long before we had ever been properly introduced. The men no longer shrunk from the Asha's touch. When Lady Tia moved to assist them, they relaxed, submitting to her treatment. More people had been brought in, this time civilians who had been caught in the crossfire. They cried out at the sight of the Eshma, who made a strange rumbling noise and laid down on the ground with its head tucked between its paws, the picture of docility, if not for the terrible spikes along its form. But why? I asked. Throughout the Asha's telling of her own story, the Death Seeker had been silent, content to listen with few objections. Of his own life, he had said very little, and save for his earlier proposal to his lover, to abandon this enterprise and flee,